If I can have your attention, we'll go ahead and get started with our program this morning. We're starting just a hair early because we have a multitude of announcements to get made before we present our speaker for this morning. I want to welcome all of you to another meeting of the First Friday Breakfast Club, an association of gay and bisexual men and the largest private breakfast club in the state of Iowa, and we have been that for over 22 years now. And we have given more than $250,000 in scholarships to Iowa high school students who have done unusually brave and courageous things to reduce homophobia and to teach about LGBT issues. So we are making a difference. I particularly want to welcome any of you who are here for the first time. It is our tradition to provide an opportunity for people who are here for the first time to stand up and say who they are. It's not required, but if there are those who are here for the first time and want to introduce themselves or have their host introduce them, now would be the time. Anyone? Right here?
John Wright.
Right. Very good. Welcome. Perfect. Welcome.
Landon Strait, I've heard about the club here for a little while. Just wanted to say that.
Welcome.
I'm Ray Maruga. I retired from teaching in the last school year and also turned 65, so I had to navigate the Medicare system. And through that process, decided that I'm not a stupid person, but I was totally confused and was crazy making. Decided I wanted to help other people with that. So I'm working with the SHIP program in conjunction with One Iowa. They have given me space and time in their office to help others with that.
So, welcome. Welcome. Are there others?
I'm Joe Kreger. I'm a student, graduate student at the University of Iowa. So part of one of the projects I'm working on is to be part of a social group that I'm unfamiliar with, and one that's generally discriminated against in the community. So I'm interested in learning more about what you're talking about, the issues of homophobia and discrimination. And obviously, one of my goals in social work would be to continue to learn about that and I guess just advocate for the rights of everyone that's discriminated against. So,
welcome.
Thank you for welcoming me.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, well, those of you who are regulars, if you will look around, there are still a few unfamiliar faces. And so if you will make it a point to be sure they feel welcome, they'll be back and may introduce themselves at a future time. If you did not receive an email reminder of our meeting and a request for you to RSVP, it is because I don't have an accurate email address for you. So if there are any of you who would like to be getting a friendly reminder about our meetings every month, and so that I can have a more accurate headcount, if you'll give me your correct email address, we'll get you on that listserv and you'll get those reminders. On the piano back here is our book exchange, and that is coordinated by my partner Scott Cucno, and appreciate that. And if you want to borrow a book, you're welcome to. There's no checkout system. If you have books that you'd like to share, why, be sure and bring those, and we will include those in our collection. Encourage you to check out the First Friday Breakfast Club website, ffbciowa.org. If you want to hear one of our speakers again, or you miss a meeting and want to hear the speaker, we have audio recordings of our speakers on the website. On your tables, there are a number of flyers. One is about life journeys, which is also sort of meshes with our topic of this morning. And this is a service that is available for people to get evaluation of their ability to live independently and the various kinds of resources that are available for those who are limited in their ability to live independently. One of the most dangerous forms of insurance is long-term care insurance, because the day you become eligible for it is the day you aren't capable of making contact with the insurance company and fighting with the insurance company and being on hold forever and getting a call back and dealing with the bureaucracy of the insurance company. So it's a very unique kind of insurance for that reason. Also on the tables is a flyer about the Firefly Creek Ranch. It is a retreat center in Guthrie Center, Iowa, that may be of interest to some of you. And there is also a white sheet on each of the tables, which is a supplement for resources that may be interesting to you in conjunction with the speaker that is going to be presenting this morning. Also, I want to let you know that this morning I gave our treasurer a check for $281 from the United Way. That is a result of a number of us who make our pledge to the United Way and earmark it for the First Friday Breakfast Club. We are eligible for that earmark. The United Way takes a cut of, 7 or 8% and passes all of the other money on to the First Friday Breakfast Club. So anyone of you who is pressured by your employer to give to United Way, so everybody is giving, you can designate First Friday Breakfast Club as the recipient of your generosity. I've also had a couple of inquiries about contact information for Donna Redwing, who many of you will are aware is struggling with cancer right now. And so if anyone has her contact information, I have her address, but if anyone has her contact information, I'm wanting to get that to David Twombly, for example. And so if you will get that to me, I'll get it to David and anyone else who inquires about contact information for Donna Redwing. The FFBC board meeting is going to be next Wednesday, the 8th, at Scott's in my home on the south side. Board members are certainly welcome, and anyone who would like to attend, touch base with me or Scott, and we'll give you easy to follow directions. The newsletter copy deadline is going to be a week from next Monday on November the 13th. So for those of you who are regular contributors to the newsletter, that's our deadline. If there are others of you who would like to contribute to the newsletter, just get your copy to me and we'll see that it gets into the newsletter. Next, on Sunday the 5th, this coming Sunday, there's a fundraising event for Capital City Pride. Dan Jansen. Dan, you want to say anything about it?
Capital City Pride, we have reestablished a long-standing tradition called the T-Dance. The tea dance was kind of created at the period where men weren't allowed to really congregate and dance together. So rather than calling it going to the bar or whatever, going to a dance, they called it the tea dance. So we reestablished that. We're having it once a month, the first Sunday of every month. We're having a traveling location. This month is at Ricochet in the East Village. I think in December we're having it at Peace Street. And in January at the Republic.
And that's on Sunday between 2 and 6 o'clock. Next, on the 11th, Saturday the 11th, is our next prose party from 7 to 10 o'clock at Floors Direct, which is at 2239 Northwest 108th Street in Clive. Next, Michael Eagle is going to mention something about an As-One DMMO. Yes?
In the category of shameless promotion here, we're doing a film that we performed in the summer, but I think you will have a postcard of a production we're doing in 2 weeks at the Stoner Theater in cooperation with One Iowa and Transformations Iowa. It's a marvelous piece called As-One, based on the life story of transgender filmmaker Kimberly Reed. Set to music for Spring for Dead, two singers. It's a chance to see it. It's been produced numerous times around the country, and I'm really excited to bring it here to Des Moines. Kimberly Reed, the transgender filmmaker who inspired the show, will be here in residence. And we're actually showing, if anybody's interested, a free film screening of her film, The Prodigal Sons, at Fuller Cinema 2 p.m. on Sunday the 12th, but I'd love for you to all attend on November 17th, 18th, and 19th at Stoner's Theater as we present this opera with One Iowa, Transformations Iowa, in the days leading up to the day of our demo, which is Monday the 20th of this month. So we hope you all will come, and there's information on our social media if you would share it, and that's the thing we would sure appreciate it. It's a marvelous show, and I promise you'll enjoy it very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael. And Mark Turnage, you have something to say about a transgender conference.
Yes. Good morning, Bruce Friday. I'm Mark Turnage. I'm the registrar for Iowa Safe Schools. On November 17th, we'll be having our Transgender Education Summit. While this is mostly designed for educators, it's also open to the public, and anyone who attends will have the tools they need to make their environment more welcoming for transgender individuals. Again, it's November 17th at the Embassy Suites in the East Village. And I'd also like to thank anyone who attended the Spirit Awards recently. We appreciate your support. We had about 500 people attend, and we raised about $10,000. So thank you all.
Great. Next, Rick Miller is going to say something about a Pride Center fundraiser.
Pride Center will be on these cards. You'll find it on the back. You'll find all the information you need to go to the fundraiser. Two real exciting things have just emerged recently. Our library is going on interlibrary loan for the state of Iowa with all libraries, so all libraries will have access to almost 3,000 books in our library. We're real excited about that. There's a lot of things going on behind the scenes to make that work. The second thing is YES, which is a youth center downtown that deals with 16 to 21 year olds, has a lot of gay, lesbian students or people that age that use it, and we are taking on every weekend to cover food for them, and we are encouraging other organizations to join us to help with that. And there's only about 10 that actually regularly use the facility, so they're not providing food for like 50 or 150 people. This will help. If any of you can come and get a table or even donate, it will make a big difference for the center. Thank you so much.
Great. If any of you got up this morning and thought, I've just got more money than I know what to do with, and we're giving you plenty of opportunity to places, worthy causes. Next, on Friday, December the 11th, there is a fundraiser at the Garden. It's to commemorate the World AIDS Day. So there's another opportunity on Friday the 11th of December. Then on Tuesday, December the 19th, Progress Iowa is having an event at the temple at 5:30. That is something that many of us are involved in. And then I call your attention to the prime timers of Central Iowa. They have a lot of activities going on, damn near every other day throughout November, and a wide variety of activities at that. So you'd be hard pressed to look over that collection of activities and not find something that you would like to participate in. And I think that's all of the announcements for today. So I will turn to Steve Person, who is going to be introducing our speaker for this morning. Steve.
Thank you. Good morning. Dean Lerner is a graduate of Grinnell College and Drake University Law School. He retired from 30 years of public service as an Iowa Assistant Attorney General, Iowa's Chief Deputy Secretary of State, and Deputy/Director of the Department of Inspections and Appeals. Post-retirement, Dean has worked as a contractor/consultant to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services Division of Nursing Homes, a Commonwealth Fund grant research author, a healthcare fraud consultant to the United States Attorney for the Northern District of Iowa, a consultant to Disability Rights Iowa, an expert witness in health facility abuse and neglect cases, and a member of the law firm Kellenson & Lerner, PLC. Also, I'm very pleased that he is the father of one of my former students, Scott Lerner, and Scott is doing very well nowadays. I wrote Scott's college recommendation many years ago. So, Dean.
Scott actually got into one of those schools, and thank you for that recommendation. The check is in the mail. One of my table mates said that one of the things I should try to do is inject humor into my presentation today. And given the subject matter, it's a little bit challenging to inject humor into aging in Iowa and the political climate and some of the hurdles that we all are facing as we age. And I too just turned 65 and navigated the Medicare challenges, and it isn't easy, and it doesn't get any easier, and I think it's going to get probably a little worse over time. I brought some kind of prompts today to kind of help me to show you what the aging community is like in the state of Iowa. One of the things that I have done, in addition to those that Steve enumerated, is I decided that one of the ways that I could be effective as an advocate for the aging community was to write for the Des Moines Register and some other newspapers around the state. And so I signed up, and they were kind enough to publish several of my articles along the way, and I think that's actually what generated my invitation. Is Jonathan had read one of my pieces where I have been in an ongoing battle with Senator Grassley about whether he really does indeed, as he claims, care about and advocate for elder Iowans, and I'll let you be the judge of that. The article I think that Jonathan had seen was I posed after Senator Grassley responded to one of my complaints about one of his positions, or more than one of his positions. He wrote an article in the Register saying, you know, I've been a tireless advocate for the elderly. The Register was kind enough to let me respond to that, and I posed to him 9 questions, and this was back in March. I'm still waiting for answers to any of those questions, but I thought one of the things that I might do today would be to read these 9 questions and tell you a little bit about why I asked each of them. So the first one was, will you fully support the new nursing home care regulations, or will you go along with the GOP's promise that every new regulation must be accompanied by the elimination of 2 existing rules? The nursing home rules that were in place for many, many, many years were drafted in response to OBRA 87, the nursing home reform law that was passed in 1987. So the regulations, which comprise really hundreds of pages, hadn't been hardly touched since then. A few years ago, under the Obama administration, the advocates and others got together to see if we could improve the regulations that address caregiving issues, staffing, etc., in nursing homes. Assisted living programs, by the way, are not federally regulated. There's a hodgepodge of state regulations. Iowa has some. They're inadequate, and I don't see them being changed anytime in the near future. But so a couple years ago, the Obama administration decided that they would tackle a rewrite of the regulations. Some were much, much better, and others weren't great. The main one that I think really should have been dealt with is staffing requirements, but the industry is unbelievably powerful. Those staffing regulations will never happen under the current climate. So there is no requirement for staffing in these places. Staffing is adequate to meet the needs of the residents. Well, And if you read some of Clark Talkman's articles, you'll conclude that adequate to meet the needs of the residents is woefully inadequate. So these regulations were promulgated. There were 10,000 comments that came in. Mine was one of them. And I'll be darned, but the new administration has decided that they're going to reject most of those, and they're going to slow roll the rest. They were supposed to be implemented over a 3-year period of time, the easiest first, and give the industry time to respond, then a year later the second phase, and a year later the third phase. Well, that's all out the window now. And if any of you would like to become advocates to protest this, it is, I hate to say this, probably futile, but it makes you feel good about doing it anyway. And so I would say right on, and I can provide you with some information on how to go about doing that. There's a national organization called the National Consumer Voice for Quality Care. It's one of the premier advocacy groups in the country. It's headquartered in Washington, D.C., and I was lucky to be a member of their board for 6 years, and they do wonderful work in terms of advocating. You can read, if you care to, the 407 pages of regulations that the Obama administration promulgated, and you can see how important they are, or would be, to the care of the elderly. I'm supposed to be humorous. Getting old, it ain't for no sissies. It's really tough. I have just been personally, academically, I get this stuff. I understand it. I've done research. But my parents had to be admitted to a nursing home, and we had them in two different facilities in St. Louis. And on a personal level, it's a whole different ballgame when you're watching the care or the lack thereof. I moved them twice, and my dad recently passed away. My mom is in a memory care unit, and these are not easy times. But I think that one of the things that we can all do is to plan ahead, think about these issues, and think about how you would want your housing and services to be administered to you, and where, and have a little information about that I'll share in a minute. The second question I posed to, and by the way, Senator Grassley has been AWOL when it comes to supporting the continuation of those regulations, that isn't going to change. Since the nursing home industry has legally challenged the new regulation forbidding nursing homes from requiring that residents agree to binding pre-dispute arbitration agreements, will you propose legislation to codify this rule protecting residents? Jonathan could probably better explain to you what a pre-dispute arbitration agreement is, but very simply put, before you sign a contract to go into a nursing home, that contract says that you're not going to be able to sue them. You're going to have to go to arbitration. And the Obama administration had actually passed a rule saying those are banned, those are outlawed, we won't allow them, because of the uneven bargaining power of someone who's getting ready to sign up to be in a nursing home and the industry. Well, the industry took issue with this elimination, and they sued in federal court, got an injunction. But better yet, why worry about the federal court? Why don't we just legislatively, do away with that? And that's exactly what the Republican administration has done. This has been a real bee in my bonnet because I think these things are so terrible. One of the worst things about them is they control not only just one aspect of your contract, buy a car, and they say if you got a beef about the car, But this is every aspect of your life, from when you wake up in the morning to you go to sleep at night. Everything that happens to you in a nursing home is controlled by an arbitration agreement, and they're secret. So if abuse and neglect has been happening, and you happen to want to, or your family does want to challenge that, it's going to be kept secret from the rest of the residents who really should know about that, and the only way they would is if it's litigated. So that one is one that sticks in my craw. And I have a little headline about Senator Grassley and Ernst. They're still trying to figure out what their position is on this. This came up time and time again historically, and Grassley has never, ever backed that rule, because in essence he's really kind of in the pocket of the industry, and we'll talk about that in a second. Will you support the ability of residents to take their grievances against nursing homes to court without inhibitions such as the GOP's tort reform efforts limiting injured resident claims? Well, our own representative, Steve King, you just gotta love that guy. And I just love the titles that they assign to their legislation. This is called Protecting Access to Care Act of 2017. It's H.R. 1215, if any of you want to look this up, but it contracts the statute of limitations for suing any kind of health care provider that gets federal funds, including nursing homes. So it contracts the statute of limitations, and one of the things that's most offensive to me is it limits the amount of damages that are allowable against that defendant, no matter what the injury might have been, abuse, neglect, sexual exploitation. And you've seen the headlines in the Register. If you think it doesn't happen in Iowa, think again. Another humor injection. But the most offensive part of that is juries are not allowed to be informed of that limitation. So when the jury is sitting thinking about assigning damages and they said, this is pretty darn awful, we're going to really, you know, send a message, they don't even know that that's going to be taken down to the statutorily allowed amount. And this is a recent attempt. Jonathan will appreciate this. It restricts attorneys' contingent fee agreements. It restricts how much attorneys can take of an award, and these cases are hard to do in the first place. They're really challenging, and very few attorneys will tackle these abuse and neglect cases. The defense always argues that well, they're old, they're going to die anyway, and so you know, to further impose these kind of requirements is just unbelievably offensive to me, and I'm sure to you as well. Will you allow the Register to attend your meetings with the nursing home industry? Got another headline here that I'm not finding it right now. I hope I brought it. Maybe I didn't. Anyway, it relates to Senator Grassley having a meeting, and Clark Kaufman wrote this again. Thank goodness for Clark Kaufman of the Des Moines Register to at least expose some of this. Senator Grassley was invited to meet with the industry to hear all their complaints about just how abusive the regulators are, even under the Branstad administration. You've got to be kidding me. I was relieved of my responsibilities, and Branstad, when he ran to be governor, one of his first promises was that he'd get rid of me because I was the gotcha guy. I really thought that, you know, the residents of facilities deserved us to follow the law and protect them. But that was characterized as a gotcha attitude, and and I didn't give him the pleasure of firing me. I resigned before he could do that. That's something makes me feel good. Will you disclose the campaign contributions you've solicited and accepted from the industry? There are some that are able to be discovered, and there are others that are not. The healthcare industry is famously wealthy in terms of its ability to contribute to campaigns, not only at the national level, but the state level. And I regret to say that both Democrats and Republicans are susceptible to those, what I characterize as bribes, quid pro quo. And I was the victim of that. The Democrats, when I was in office, even though they said you're doing the right thing, they changed the law, which hadn't been changed on nursing home regulation, to make it weaker in Iowa. And the Democrats were the ones who actually promoted that. And I regret to say that Governor Colbert, a very good friend of mine who appointed me, signed the bill. So this is not just one party or the other, although I must say it's more weighted toward the Republicans. Several government accountability office reports cite repeated failures of federal inspections of nursing homes. Enforcement actions are minimal, and drastic budget cuts in inspectors endanger resident safety. Will you propose additional funding to add and train a sufficient number of inspectors? You might have read recently where the long-term care ombudsman's office is no longer able because of budget cuts. They have 8 inspectors to go out and handle complaints in over 400 nursing homes and 300, at least when I was in office, assisted living programs. 8 people to be able to do that. Well, the budget was cut so much that they can't go out anymore. They have to talk to residents of these facilities over the telephone, as if they're, you know, capable of doing that, or if that's an effective way to, and that's something that you all ought to be just screaming about if you can, this next legislative session. The Institute of Medicine sets the guidelines for those numbers of how many of those long-term care ombuds persons ought to be in a state. Even the 8 was embarrassingly insufficient. The IOM, Institute of Medicine, said that according to the number of residents and the number of facilities, there should be at least 28. This is sad. So when you're in a facility and you think you have a concern that you'd like to bring to the attention of the regulators, good luck with getting your phone call answered, and good luck with having that person have enough time to actually deal with that concern that you have. This is, to me, it's just an abomination. I wish that all of the gubernatorial candidates would be talking about this stuff, and I'm trying to meet with them to encourage them to do that, and if you attend any of their sessions, ask them what's their position on long-term care in the state of Iowa. You are familiar with the Iowa Healthcare Association, which lobbies for the interests of nursing homes, primarily for-profit homes. Why should this association receive millions of taxpayer dollars through members' dues? Will you take action to prevent this? This one really sticks in my craw, too. I guess I have a number of them that do. But you know how broke we are in terms of Medicaid, and we're just cutting and cutting and cutting because of that wonderful budget management that we've had since the Branstad administration. Culver actually left a surplus of $800 million, truth be told. Now, you know, we're dipping into reserves to, you know, to balance the budget. But The Iowa Healthcare Association is an association that whose whole purpose is to advocate for these nursing homes, and mostly for-profit ones. And they advocate for less regulation and more money. That's their whole reason for being. The state of Iowa has rules that allow that association to be paid Medicaid dollars because they get reimbursed for membership dues by the facilities. The facilities put membership dues on their cost report. They send it into the state. The state pays them that membership dues, and they pay it over to the Iowa Healthcare Association. Is that something else? Tens of millions of dollars over time. 10 years ago, it was $1.3 million. I shudder to think what the membership dues are now. The executive director of that organization had just retired. 10 years ago, his salary was over $317,000. Your money. Paying for an association to really, you know, lobby against the interests of residents in facilities. Now, I don't dispute that they have a right to exist, but whether we should be funding that is a real question. The Rules Review Committee held a hearing on this at my urging. I testified, and there wasn't a single Democrat or Republican on the Rules Review Committee who stood up to this. And the industry was in the back of the room whispering in their ear, you know, you want those campaign contributions, you better squash this. They also had a rule that allowed for the attorneys that fight against regulations. We pay those attorneys too out of Medicaid funds. And we pay them not at the rate that the state lawyers get to fight those things, but we pay them at their going rate. Jonathan, you might, you know, do something about that. Davis Law Firm is one of the ones that I constantly did battle with. But I think that's wrong. I think they should get paid, especially if they prevail. I think it should be limited if they do prevail. But I think it should be capped at, you know, what the government lawyers are making, and not $300 an hour when it's our taxpayer dollars that are at stake. Do you recognize the devastating impacts of the American Healthcare Act on the elderly and nursing home residents? Will you vote against it and draft and support amendments or alternative legislation to ensure that all Iowans have health insurance as a matter of right, and that nursing home residents are not disadvantaged or harmed? Well, we all know how he voted on that one, and Senator Ernst as well. Finally, and I want to wrap this up so I can respond to some of your questions. Every knowledgeable nursing home care advocate will tell you that the three most important factors in resident health, safety, and welfare are 1, staffing, 2, staffing, and 3, staffing. Yet research reveals that untold numbers of nursing homes are understaffed, with undertrained, poorly paid, disrespected, and scapegoated employees. Do you have any plan to address this problem? The turnover in nursing homes when I was in office of the CNAs, certified nurse aides, those that mostly care for the residents, was 65%. You make as much money, flipping hamburgers at McDonald's. Not to say that that isn't a worthy enterprise, but my God, when are we going to recognize that this is a group to be respected and rewarded for their efforts? And there's a group called the Iowa Caregivers Association that's lobbied forever to try to increase the awareness of these issues and how short the state of Iowa and the nation is on caregivers. They're, you know, us baby boomers, we're going to be lucky to have people there to take care of us. Those are my remarks on my cheery remarks on regulation, but I did a little extra research, and I'm not the expert on this, but I did a little background work, and Jonathan called me, and I thought it was interesting to read that there are some providers who are recognizing the LGBT community and creating facilities that are more friendly to that community. And there's a Santa Fe-based Rainbow Vision that is working on developing assisted living. And I'm sure that this is not the only one of those facilities. And my research also told me that LGBT suffer more chronic health conditions than heterosexual studies find, which, you know, puts more folks at risk. I could go on and on about the government stuff. I won't. You're on your table. Are some resources that you might find interesting. I got in touch with a woman by the name of Cheryl Wayland. She's with SAGE, Services and Advocacy for Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Elders. And there's some great resource materials on that website. I don't know whether anybody familiar with SAGE. And it focuses on elder rights, and there's some regulations that you know would be wonderful to pursue that protect the rights of gay, lesbian, transgender. To kind of end up here, the Trump administration is also looking to rescind the Obama administration rule that would have required long-term care facilities to recognize and ensure the rights for same-sex marriage. They've done away with that provision as well. You just gotta love them. Well, with that, I'll open it up for questions, and if you have any, and hopefully the recording of this didn't go through and won't be filtered to Senator Grassley. Actually, I'd love him to hear this. Yes.
You know, another area in regards to healthcare facilities that we're dumping a lot of our developmentally disabled and chronically younger people into facilities that are totally inappropriate. Just a comment in regards to your talking about the healthcare workers. In the late 70s and 80s, I worked with the Governor's Planning Council for Developmental Disabilities. At that time, we were continually adding regulations for your nursing home assistants that they be required to have expertise in a lot of different areas. These are the people who are making minimum wage. I used to call them the shift wipers. They're the ones that have the patient-to-patient contact. They're the ones that continue to do it are the ones that are really concerned about people. But they can make a living. I've had several friends recently who had to leave the field because they said, I can't live on what they're paying me.
Oh, and they're scapegoated by the facility. If something goes wrong, they're the first ones to get fired for how did you do that? When, in fact, you have, in my example that I used to talk about is, how do you decide when you're attending to an elderly lady who's on the commode and you're not supposed to leave her, and the alarm bell goes off from another room that somebody is in trouble? How do you decide which one to attend to? And it's just abysmal. And by the way, the industry claims, you know, we're just poor. We just can't afford to pay them a living wage. Clark Coffman's article should pointed out that that's not the case. 10 years ago, the money flowing to those 400 nursing homes was $1.3 billion. That's with a B, $1 billion from Medicare, Medicaid, and private pay. And what the reality is the CEOs of these companies are drawn. Even the nonprofit ones are drawn. $700,000. The board members are paid $400 an hour, and nobody's complaining about that. It's just, you know, it's happening. I have some materials that I brought to talk about the profitability,
when they cry poor. They have a very effective national advocate. His name is Mark Parkinson. He's the head of the American Healthcare Association. He was the governor of Kansas after Sebelius, and his family owned nursing homes. And when he got announced that he was going to be it, he said that we're going to continue to be the lobbying powerhouse that, you know, we've always been. And he's proven that. They got a bevy of lobbyists. The list goes on and on. And they're very effective out there. Oh, come on, there's got to be another question. Jonathan, come on, shoot me a tough one that I'll have trouble answering.
What do you think should be done? How do people organize to be advocates? And what can be done, do you think, that would be most effective?
I think pushing the gubernatorial candidates and your local representatives and attending town halls where you throw this up in the face of Grassley and Ernst and, you know, ask them these questions. And I'd be happy to help you with preparing that, too. You got to be talking about this stuff. And as you might have noticed, other than seeing these things in the register and getting a call from Jonathan, there are very few advocacy voices out there talking about what is, you know, really should be very near and dear to all of our hearts. This is us. This is us. Yes.
Where does AARP stand on all this generally, and how about Kent Sutherland in particular?
I'm going to be brutally honest here. When I was in office, I found AARP to be more interested in their economic interests than the interests of the group that they purport to valiantly represent. You don't hear AARP screaming about, you know, this stuff, because if they did, there are some other things that they want to accomplish that, that legislator might say, you yelled at me about this and you're insisting on this, so, you know, forget about that. And that's the way it works up on that hill. I spent a lot of time up there, and I got written up in the paper. One time I said, it's a shame that we department heads don't have the fistfuls of money to go up like the lobbyists do to catch the attention of the legislators. And I got calls from several legislators saying, don't bother coming up here anymore talking to us after saying something like that, which was brutally honest and absolutely true. But a bunch of spineless guys that just want to get reelected instead of taking care of the vulnerable people in this state. And it's gone on for, I've been doing this stuff for 15 years now, and it's not changing. Campaign finance reform, big ticket item. You hear anybody talking about campaign finance reform? So those are the kinds of things that I think we can all just scream about. Got another question?
Would it be accurate to say that the arbitration agreements that have to be signed effectively take away the equal rights of LGBT residents?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You're subjected to that same, you know, let's say that you're, you know, discriminated against and you want to sue. Based on that, you signed away your right to go to court. You're going to arbitration. Now, I should qualify that. There may be a provision in federal or state law that says on a matter of discrimination, they can't force you in arbitration. I'm not aware of that.
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, so I should qualify my answer to be entirely accurate. But that's a horrible provision. And you saw that headline, and that's a recent headline. Grassley and Ernst just, you know, they're scratching their heads. Well, what do we do about that? That's a tough one. That's not tough at all. And, you know, what Grassley is touts as his claim to fame on advocating for rights is, you know, he proposed a bill recently that says social media can't, you know, take pictures of naked residents or compromised residents in nursing homes.
Big deal. Big deal. That takes a lot of courage to say that. So, I mean, that's his advocacy for, you know, long-standing advocacy. There was another question. Yes.
Recently, I had went to a talk with Joni Ernst, and she was advocating, of course, the repeal of the ACA. And I said, "Well, how's that going to affect Medicare?" And she said, "It won't." And I said, "Well, that's not true." I said, "It helps people pay for the drugs when they hit the catastrophic stage. It helps limit the increase from not more than the COLA that person receives for increases in their premiums. And it also will do away with the donut hole in 2020. And she says, "You're talking about ACA." And I said, "Yes, but it's affecting Medicare." Well, she wasn't aware of this. And so I gave her the sheet. She said they'd look into it and then come back to me. And her response was that since we agreed to disagree, they're not going to do anything about it, or she doesn't know about it. And she didn't admit she didn't know about it. But there you go. She's not even going to answer the question. All I asked was, this in the ACA? She doesn't know. So if these representatives that we have elected don't even know what they're looking at, and they're voting on this just down party lines, we're in a big mess, and it's not going to improve. I even, with the state personal believe with my brother, I had called him to ask him to come and look at the nursing home situation for her care. Well, the nursing home was alerted before they even got there that they were coming. So all of a sudden, here comes the tablecloths out on the table with flowers and everything else sprang up. So if they're coming by with notification and then they start covering things up and cleaning it up, what advocate do you go to that's actually going to get it solved? There isn't one.
I used to have my inspectors go out in the middle of the night so that they, you know, wouldn't get word that we were, you know, coming. But that's a real hard thing to do, is to have them not be able to anticipate arrival. Because the standards for inspections are, you got to do an inspection under federal law once every 12 months on average, no later than 15 months. And so they could kind of predict when you were coming. So what I did is I tried to flip that around and, you know, send my folks out at, you know, early times and in the middle of the night to do the inspections. And, you know, when you have no inspectors doing the inspections, you know, what are you going to do? Well, I'm very flattered to have been invited by you and Jonathan to speak to you today.
It has been a tradition of ours, Dean, to give a token of appreciation to our speakers, and the tradition is to give them a copy of a recording of the Des Moines Women's Chorus. I hope that you enjoy it.
I appreciate that very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
So, if you woke up this morning and you were frustrated about aging, you're probably now really depressed. Thank you very much, Dean, for that. Before I extended the invitation to speak to us this morning, I had an inquiry among lawyers in our office. Anyone have any dealings with Dean Lerner? I'm thinking about inviting him to be a speaker at the Breakfast Club. And one of my colleagues who has been on the other side of some issues with Dean, look back that Dean is smart, he has high integrity, and he's tenacious. That did it for me. I said I had to invite him. And then they concluded he's a worthy adversary. So we could see that is obviously true from his remarks. Politics begin when there is a household with two teenagers and one car. We've learned now from Dean Lerner that those politics continue right into our senior years and into our nursing home facilities. This presentation really dovetails with the presentation that
had from Lauren Olson, who was giving the clarion call for greater advocacy, awareness and advocacy for people as they age, particularly LGBT people who sometimes find that they are forced back into the closet because of the unfriendly environment that they face when they enter some of these facilities. It is advocates like you, Dean, that make a big difference. I call again to your attention the sheet that is on the table that gives you some, identifies some other resources that you might want to take a look at, both as to the aging issue and their regulation, as well as particularly LGBT issues. That may be something that will motivate us to get organized and maybe even talk to Mr. Sovereign about AARP and greater advocacy by them. I know him pretty well, and I think I'm going to give him a call. Okay, next, we're going to be meeting again on December the 1st. Our speaker will be Reverend Matt Maurice LaCroix, who's a senior pastor at Plymouth Congregational Church. I know great things about him, and you can really look forward to his presentation. In January, our speaker will be Senator Matt McCoy. And in February, I'm planning on a man in uniform for our speaker, as the person to be announced. Thank you for being here today. We'll see you this afternoon.
Fallen down, and I set it on the box.
Let's see, where did it go?
I'm sure it's here somewhere. Well,
maybe it fell in here. Do you see it anywhere?
That's okay.
That's a little bitty thing.
I know. It's my little...
So this will be...